Welcome to another episode of the Politatine Podcast. You are currently listening to the one-hour segment of our podcast. To listen and watch the full conversation, head over to politatine.com and click the Watch tab in the top right. If that's not your thing, we appreciate you and hope that you enjoy the episode. Rolling. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Politatine Podcast. My name is Damian Galvin, and as always, I am joined by my wonderful co-host, Varun.
My name is Varun Kadathal, and I have some food in my mouth. I'm trying to swallow down before we begin this podcast. But hey, guys, we're back for our second episode of season number two of Politatine with Will Carroll, our conservative correspondent. While I finish my food, can you introduce yourself to all of our new listeners, Will?
Hello, everyone. I am Will Carroll of the Politatine Podcast. I am the conservative correspondent. I have been on the show, this might be 10th time ever, and every time I come on, I say the same thing. If you want to know more about me, about how I talk, please go look at, we've done other podcasts. We did one about rioting and the debates and runoff election. I'm just looking at the titles of my note documents right now. But definitely go back to the early episodes. This podcast has evolved a lot, but I think that some of the first episodes might be some of the best too, but go check those out. And go Spotify, they're on Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts too, I think. But
listen up. Yeah, definitely. This is Will's first visual episode too.
Second.
Yeah, no, I can't see visual on Will, but we can go ahead and resolve that soon. But anyways, we talked a lot about politics for the past 7 months or so on Politatine. This is the first time we're going to really delve into economics from a service level because of the fact that I've never wanted to cuss so bad on this podcast. I mean, like, what the GME? What are you doing to us, man? GameStop has been up, 400% over the past, 24 hours of it. And it's all because of, the people, right? The people and not the big hedge funds. It's the people putting money. If you guys know how the stock market works, you would know that if enough people put money into a stock, the price goes up. And that's what happened to GME over these past couple of days. That's what's going to happen to AMC probably. It's this Reddit channel that I've known about for months. It's called Wall Street Bets, and the whole world's going crazy about it because it's pushing companies like BlackBerry, which are dead, to the top. And it's Gen Zers, man. It's like bored kids literally just playing with the market and playing with our economy. Like, what the hell?
We're trolling the stock market. We're literally trolling.
It's like, literally bored kids, man.
Like, yeah, what? Yeah, no. It is. And it's really like funny, especially when you go in and you have these in-depth conversations with other individuals about how fragile certain economies are, and it's like, no, capitalism is more strong, and then a bunch of kids just hop on TikTok and they're like, hey, why don't we just play with the stock market?
We're playing with the economy.
Yeah, play with the economy. And it's just really funny because you have these, especially us, we spend a bunch of time having these in-depth conversations about what's the best way to move forward, and some kids are just like, hey, let's just mess around with the stock market, let's just play with
it. I have
time
on my Sunday, let's play with the stock market. How about that? Instead of playing basketball, let's play with the stock market. The whole global order of the economy and money. No, I was gonna put money into GameStop at $100. I was gonna put in 10 shares, $1,000 a GameStop, and I chickened out. I was like, it's Wall Street Bets, man, what are kids gonna do to the stock market? And I realized that I could triple my money.
Just for reference, what is today? The 27th? All right. So the 28th of December, it was sitting right about $21.
Yep.
It closed today at almost $350.
Yeah.
What the people that the people that mainstream culture is making fun of is like, oh, you're a Reddit kid. They just...
Yeah,
F the whole stock market.
They took you by storm, man. they took you by storm. All these analysts and traders and hedge funds—they killed you because everybody shorted these stocks. They shorted AMC. They shorted all these companies. Citron Research, but shorted AMC and shorted GameStop, is down $3.5 billion kids bankrupted one of the almost bankrupted one of the biggest companies in the world in shorting. Like, the power of the people has never been more more explicit. Like, it's just, it's crazy to me that a big shorting company that owns billions of dollars was almost bankrupt by a bunch of kids, bunch of bored kids. Kids have a lot of power. Go out and invest in your free time. It's crazy, man. But we can continue on this point unless y'all want to talk about how crazy this is for a little bit.
No, I mean, we can even go. It's just, I mean, hey, it kind of goes to show the power of, like, unionizing, like getting a bunch of people together and getting them to advocate for one thing. I mean, these kids literally unionized and went and bought stocks and bankrupted a company. It was, oh, man. It's impressive.
BlackBerry CEO is like, dude, I'd never thought I'd get this much money from a bunch of teenagers. Our company was dying. We came out. Yeah, and we like gained GameStop, so much money.
GameStop made its money before it, you know, buying your games off of you, buying like 8 games for like $20 and a button before. But
yeah,
you know, now they're, maybe they can actually, you know, pay me for, you know, my limited edition copy of Fallout 4. Like, no, okay, fine. Just, you can take it for.
AMC, we talked with one of our Republican guests, Mark Morris, the former state representative for District 26 in Georgia. He said AMC was a done business. Like, they were going to go bankrupt after COVID-19. That. And what happened, man? I mean, they're still probably going to go bankrupt. Nothing's going to stop them from going bankrupt. They're going to short AMC after this whole rise. The kids I'm talking about. But it's just the power of what people can do. People were talking about how AMC and GameStop have done more for their college savings and their you know, unemployment than the government has, which is funny because people are financing their whole college tuitions off of a stock and off of collective, I guess, power. And it shows, like, they can't do anything about it because it's free speech, right? You can post whatever the hell you want on social media platforms and on Reddit, but it's free speech. And, you know, there's been discussions about free speech over the past couple of weeks in detail, but this is one of them, as much as it may not seem that.
Okay, my question is, I am not, like, as in tune as with the stock market as like Varun and you guys are in terms of, like, actual, like how it works. So my question is, if they're going to pay out, like, obviously the company's the one that pays out the individuals, right? Or who pays out, like, when you buy stocks?
So individuals sell and trade stocks. Companies don't pay the individuals until dividends. But you would literally, like, sell your stock to somebody else. For example, if I bought AMC right now and I sold it at a high for like $20 or so, I would sell it to somebody else, right?
So
not
who's,
the company
so
itself
who's,
to cash out.
What if
on
no
the
one
deficit.
Wants to buy your sales? Like, what if
it's gonna
no
take
one's
a long time for you to sell the stock? But it'll still sell at some point. I've never seen, like, the seller not go through. Sometimes I've had to wait, like, you know, a couple of hours for the order to go through, but somebody's always on the receiving end of it.
That's weird. So what, like, who the hell would be in supply of, or who would be, like, in need of GameStop stock at $300?
People think it's going to go to 500, and people think that it can rise higher. I mean, I thought it would cap out at 100. Will was talking about how it was, like, at $20. Like, that
yesterday,
was, like,
well, just in the past 24 hours yesterday, it closed at 147. It is
then
up
after hours,
34%. And that's $200. It's $200 more than it was yesterday.
So that's how, is this how, like, folks lose their money on the stock market? Like, they
how folks make their money.
This is how people make their money. It's how companies lose their money.
Okay. So yeah, but, like, okay, what if I, like, buy hella GameStop stocks right now, and this is, like, its peak? I would lose a bunch of money,
you're
right?
You're going to lose money because what's going to happen is, just for context, Wall Street Bets is going to start shorting that stock. And shorting means betting on its downfall, basically. and so for all of you guys who don't know, we're having an economic conversation about personal finance. But, you know, shorting a stock means you're, like, betting against the stocks, gains. And so when a stock goes downwards, you gain money. And after this whole rise, Wall Street Bets people are all going to short the stock, which means they're going to bet on its downfall. The stock will go downwards. Which is basically what's going to happen in the next couple of days and weeks. It's going to go monumentally downwards. All its gains will be reversed. I'll tell you that now. But it's all temporary, and it's just kind of a showing of, like, how fragile our economy is and how fragile our securities of the marketplace are. You know, moving on to more.
Yeah.
Could
this not again, sorry, not to, like, stay on this topic and push it. So could this, like, not inflate the economy? Like, you're putting in money that hasn't been gained. Like, you're giving a false sense of value onto a product, right?
Right. That's the point. There is a false sense of value, but the value will fall. And that's how the market, the problem is we think of the stock market, guys, as a place wherein we determine the price and the value of certain goods. When you have things like GameStop and things like AMC, which have been, you know, plummeting downwards. AMC is a more good example of it, but they've been plummeting downwards and you have their values going up. It's a vast dichotomy between what you want the stock market to predict and what's it's actually predicting. And so it's more of, and to Damien's point, you were kind of talking about how it's really not that. Well, it's more of what the hedge fund managers and what the top 1% think is the most valuable thing on the marketplace, not what the people think. Now it's like, it's really what the people control. Right, because you talked about corporations controlling it. Now people control it, and it shows the power of, like, you know, corporations don't have a monopoly upon these things. If enough people can get behind the cause, then they can plummet to the, you know, they can rise to the top, and that's all people powered movements. So unionization is a good point of it.
Yeah. That's what I was gonna ask you. So if enough people decide to get together to overthrow the 1%, like, you know, like not necessarily come to their demands.
All right.
Maybe like in, I don't know, in all a union or something. Could that like be good? Well, you know what? We're gonna wake up like Theodore Roosevelt. He's just gonna wake up. He's gonna be like, "All right, now we need to bust unions on Reddit." He's gonna start making a
hilarious.
He's gonna start, what's it called? Oh my god, I can't remember the I can't remember the term for it. But we're gonna start like de-unionizing Reddit.
Isn't that just getting rid of subreddits? Like, aren't subreddits just tiny?
Isn't that an infringement on freedom of speech?
Yeah.
We're going to start with r/conservative.
r/neocon. r/neocon is a scary and dark subreddit. Do not go on there. I don't know how that's been shut down yet, but neocons is like neo-Nazis. I'm going to be honest. Like, the idea of neoconservatism is not a bad idea, but the Reddit channel is Nazis. But anyways, on to more pressing news, not more pressing, but more recent news about the Biden administration, which got inaugurated last Wednesday. We have had a major contentious discussion happen over the past couple of weeks and this last week about the Pipeline XL project that ran through a bunch of Native territory and through the Ogallala Aquifer, and they halted that whole project, which would, to the conservatives' point, create more jobs. So I wanted to talk about, you know, your approaches towards that whole controversy, Will, and we can kind of talk about that and have a good discussion about what the two sides of that whole discussion about the pipeline are, if you want to go ahead, the Keystone Pipeline.
Sure. So you actually already touched on it. My biggest issue with it is that, you know, the jobs were lost. And while, you know, it was heavily controversial because, you know, it went through indigenous land and it was wasn't exactly, you know, the most eco-friendly, wasn't exactly going to be the most eco-friendly thing. But not only were 1,000 jobs lost, during her confirmation hearing, I believe it's a her, Biden's nominee for the Secretary of Commerce, I can't remember their name, but, you know, they said, "We will make sure that you have jobs." I don't necessarily believe that, because, you know, just because you destroy 11,000 jobs in pipeline construction, and you open up, you know, 11,000 jobs in healthcare, that's not the same thing, because those same, you know, 11,000 people who lost their jobs, they aren't just going to magically become doctors overnight. And that's, you know, if you're going to have, you know, you now have 11,000 people who lost their jobs day one of Biden's administration. So, you know, I hope that the Secretary of Commerce, you know, goes through with their promise and can give the 11,000 individuals who lost their jobs, you know, ways to provide for their family. But also, on another note, gas prices are up. Gas prices are, they're climbing. I think they're still going up. And, you know, that will take its toll on the economy. I mean, how it does. I mean, you know, especially for like these people who just lost their jobs. Now they don't have an income, and the gas is, I think, you know, it was hovering around $2 for a while. Now I think it's going, I think it's around $2.60 now, but don't quote me on that. But
yeah, it is about $2.60. I think that it's an interesting take to say that 11,000 individuals lost their jobs. I think that, and again, I think I've become kind of the hot take guru here on the podcast, but I think that the one thing that our system of economy is really good at is giving a false impression of stability. A false sense, of a lot of false senses of stability, freedom of choice, among many other things. But in this case, it's a false sense of stability. And what I mean by that is these jobs weren't stable jobs that are going to be there for the next 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years. So when you give these people temporary labor and you give them a reliance on a industry that's just going to fall out. It's like trying to revive the coal industry. Why are you gonna try to revive something that just doesn't work? Why would we be trying to ride a 30-year-old horse when you can ride a 5-year-old horse in its prime? Or why would you invest your resources on the same 30-year-old horse that's a couple days away from dying when you could invest your resources? And I know it's grim, but you can invest your resources on that 5-year-old horse that's about to enter its prime and that's about to give you the most output possible. So while these 11,000 jobs in theory are gone, the jobs that are going to be created are immeasurable. I mean, you saw Joe Biden come out and give a press conference today, and he was talking about it. He was talking about the fact that America needs. Well, first of all, this is my take, and I had this before Joe Biden even came out. And again, I'm not a huge Joe Biden supporter, but my take is that America needs to stop trying to live in this oil dependency range. We need to once again be the world leaders. We have the financial situation to be able to be the world leaders in renewable energy, in solar energy, in wind energy. And instead of, again, trying to create a reliance on oil, we need to be going to countries like India, in South Africa, and having our employees go in there and put in means of renewable energy of solar, wind, hydroelectric, all of these things. We need to stop trying to live in the past and stop trying to and again, first of all, I haven't even mentioned the climate. I haven't even mentioned the climate. These pipelines are they're destroying the climate. They're catastrophic not only to the climate. Again, step away from that. To individuals' health, when you're talking about these aquifers and these reserves, you're going to be dealing with lawsuits, similar to what, with respect, different situation, but something like you had in Flint, where you're going to have health complications that, Will, you're talking about gas prices going up. How are people going to be able to pay for gas when their healthcare bills are skyrocketing and their premiums are going up because more and more and more people are getting cancer from the spills of these pipelines. So while you might not see the cost of it coming in, the cost of it is there. The cost of a dependency on oil is there. As a matter of fact, I think there was a Stanford, if I'm not mistaken, I know he works for NASA, but he said that that it would cost us if we go to 2%, I think it was a 2-degree increase on the atmosphere, on the atmosphere's temperature, it would cost us $37 trillion. So while it might be expensive to make this switch to renewable energy, it's a lot cheaper than keeping our dependence and our reliance on things like, fossil fuels.
May add in here, I like both points. I'm glad we have a podcast with, diverse people because we can have these takes given out. I agree with both points to a degree. I have a very centrist approach, as I always do. I think that Will's point about jobs is important to mention simply because even though the environment, and Damien, I'm a huge environmentalist. And the point right now is that we have people suffering and people in this COVID-19 pandemic without jobs or money. And for some degree, short-term game is really important for these people because, if you can't survive the pandemic, how are you going to restore the environment? And it's an argument to be made about the environment. I'm very strong about that point. I'll mention my points about the environment, kind of combine both aspects of it. And my point with regard to this is, number one, the Ogallala Aquifer. And that aquifer is not only harmful if you have oil spills. It passes through the pipeline, for context, passes through 200 miles or more of land on that Ogallala aquifer. And these aquifers, they provide, this aquifer in specific provides over 90% of the water towards irrigation sources across our nation. And what that does is if you have a single droplet or a single little spill of oil from that pipeline, this aquifer is going to be irreversibly damaged. And we know that by multiple empirical evidence and studies, that if you have a little bit of this oil being put into the aquifer, it's going to be damaged. And that's going to damage, in effect, farming operations. And so my argument towards this is with your point, well, I don't want to destroy jobs. Because if this oil spills into that aquifer, you're going to have a big, big, big crisis when it comes to 90% of where our freshwater, but not only our freshwater, but our jobs, our food, our vegetables, the things we eat every single day come from. Irrigation is a big, big thing for our environment. If that's compromised by this aquifer, which if you guys study environmental science, you would know that the Ogallala aquifer is already being depleted because of salinization and because of overdrawing of the reserves. You would have a big environmental crisis, and number two, a huge, huge, huge economic crisis. And that's where I think both things can be combined into one solution. That's my centrist centrist perspective. And second of all, beyond that, I think it's a big constitutional violation. This project, because if you think about where the lands are going through, you're going through Native American lands, and you're going through regular American lands from states like Nebraska. And what's happening there is you're not having just compensation. Under our Fifth Amendment, you need just compensation for eminent domain. People aren't getting any money for having to evade and leave their lands. They're getting told to leave their lands without any just compensation on multiple occasions. You're infringing upon Native American land. And that, to me, seems like a huge, huge, huge constitutional obligation of our president to come in and say, that's not okay, that's not rightful. And the biggest thing here is that eminent domain is usually used for domestic companies, right? National initiative and a real federal focus upon making our country better. Fact of the matter is the pipeline was created and funded by a Canadian company. And so I don't see any reason for why eminent domain, our constitution, should be used to infringe upon American land for a foreign company. It simply doesn't make sense for me and beyond that, just compensation. But I just want to say that, you know, there's a big conversation we've been having around this whole 5 minutes of talk about the pipeline project. And it's an ideological conversation. It's about short-term gain versus long-term gain. And I think that there's goods, pros and cons to both, especially during this pandemic, as I mentioned. People need help. People need help right now. And that's the argument for the conservatives and for progressives. The argument would usually be, if you stop acting right now, the future is going to be damaged, and our economic security in the future will be damaged.
Yeah, you can create job opportunities right now for individuals. You can create more than 11,000 jobs while making a switch to, green energy. It doesn't take a high level of intelligence to be able to build a dam or to install solar panels or to be able to build wind turbines. If you start doing this on a large scale, you make up for those 11,000 jobs relatively quickly. Obviously, Will was mentioning 11,000 jobs being created in a different industry. But that's not necessarily the case when you're even talking about, renewable energy. But even beyond that, re-education in these communities is extremely important. But what we're ignoring is what, again, happened in the coal mines. We tried to keep these coal mines alive for as long as possible, but eventually we just bailed out on them. And when you bail out last second, you leave a lot of holes uncovered. So instead of bailing out on these communities and trying to pretend like, green energy isn't the future, we need to go into these communities that are in Texas that are focused on getting, oil, and we need to go and re-educate the workers. We need to teach them how to go into a field of maybe carpentry. And we need to do this for free. We need to give them free technical colleges. I think that we need to give them free healthcare too, because of the fact that they've been working in oil reserves, but, we most definitely need to give them free technical college.
Right. A lot was said since I spoke last. I made a note to myself. I didn't want to forget. I noticed what you said, Damien, about how these jobs can be, you mentioned what I had said about how 11,000 jobs in building a pipeline can go over to Like they're not jobs in healthcare and all that. So saying, you know, there's still 11,000 people out of work. But my biggest issue with this is that you're getting rid of jobs without providing, you know, especially when you say, and I know Biden didn't say this, his Sec of Commerce did, I think.
Yeah, but, Governor Gina, I think she's the one of Rhode Island, if I'm not mistaken.
Right. but she didn't offer any, and like obviously this was on the spot, and this was asked by a Republican. But you know, if you're going to make a claim like that, you need to have a plan for it, and that's why, you know, obviously the environment. I wouldn't consider myself a, you know, a champion of the environment, but you know, I've had. I love going to state parks with my Boy Scout troop, and I like enjoying the outdoors, and I like camping outside, and I hate it when I go to a campsite and I see garbage everywhere, and I hate pollution. And, you know, I always, even in the hallway at my school, every time I see trash on the ground, I make a habit to pick it up just because, you know, this is the only world we're going to get. But that being said, we need to have a plan to get these people jobs. And, you know, so I made a note and I compared it to what FDR did in the New Deal and how people did build dams and, you know, most famously, probably the Hoover Dam. And, you know, that's hydroelectric, that's renewable. But, you know, not just that, you can, you know, there's geothermal, there's solar, there's wind. And, you know, in Indiana, there's a highway that goes from, I think it's north of Indianapolis. It goes up to Chicago, but there's just a four-lane highway that has, it's a bunch of farmland and, you know, government bought a hundred foot like circumference of a plot of land, and they slapped a wind turbine on there. And there's like, God, I want to say there's like 100 wind turbines at least in this little area. And, you know, Indiana, it's all flat. So, you know, you've got a lot of opportunities for that. So that's, you know, that's a huge, you know, example of what you can do for just creating energy for especially renewable energy. So, but just to conclude what I've been saying, if you're going to kill jobs, at least try and think of a plan to, you know, supply these people who are now currently out of jobs in a pandemic with jobs.
Yeah.
And I agree. Let me chime in here for a minute, guys. I think that the approach towards doing it, and I'm a big environmentalist, as Damian knows, I believe that, you know, we have 20 years left before we're in a really bad stage with the environment, with heat strokes going on across the world. It's going to be a real catastrophe if we don't, you know, cut down upon fossil fuels and these unsustainable forms of energy. But I think the major way in which we create jobs right here and right now in this nation is not through the environment as much as I want it to be, because that would cost capital, take time. I think the number one most immediate way to create jobs is through Build Back Better. And the idea that you can use a COVID-19 pandemic to create more jobs around testing sites, to create more jobs around mitigating the pandemic, contact tracers, et cetera. So I think there's a huge opportunity for jobs to be created to mitigate the COVID-19 pandemic. And that's where we should be diverting funds. And so you can kill two birds in one stone, right? You can stop the outbreaks across this nation. And you can also create more jobs towards public safety and health, because we need those right now, right? States haven't been getting enough funding towards more teachers. For example, our school district has online school. Damian knows this. Online school is understaffed. So teachers have to work two shifts, online school and in-person school. If we had teachers for every single one of those things, designated online teachers and in-person teachers, it would help our school atmosphere and hire more people. And so there's a huge opportunity for our government to be financing and hiring more individuals and using their stimulus funds towards hiring more people on their payroll with the pandemic. And that's what FDR did, right? He hired more people, as you said, to your credit, all the reforms that he had, hired more individuals toward infrastructure projects. And I think to Damian's point earlier, we have to shift towards renewables sometime or another, because the coal industry is a dying industry. We saw Trump try to revive the industry during his 4 years of presidency, and all that he did was he tried, right? He didn't succeed at it. And for the workers' sake, you know, they didn't get what they wanted because they kept their industry kept downfalling. Obviously not to the degree that it would have without stimulus checks from the government and government help, but it was still falling. And that goes to show this industry is not going to rise back up because of government intervention. It's on a downwards track. And if you want to save the people who are going down with the industry, we have to invest in more renewables. But that's a long-term solution, right? I think that's going to happen in, I hope, 6 months, 7 months, if we can install these plants and put that on the road to create more jobs in the future. Right here, right now, we have an immense opportunity to create jobs with COVID-19. That needs to be done immediately. And that's my approach towards it.
Yeah, well, the difficulty with that, Varun, is that was the claim that, you know, Will was saying with the healthcare jobs. That doesn't fill in that void for 11,000 employees that oftentimes go into oil reserves because they're undereducated, or not necessarily even undereducated, but lacked education for whatever reason. So I don't think that I would want to have someone that just was working in an oil mine, like literally like a week ago, swabbing me for COVID. Wouldn't be my most favorable individual to do that. Now, if we want to re-educate those individuals, that's going to take time. And as we're talking about, right now, time is the thing that we're struggling with. So, if instead of doing that, we give these individuals stimulus, and we give these individuals another source of outcome in the meanwhile, while we create a new industry that, to be quite honest, the reason that we're struggling with this mid-pandemic, Rune, is because we didn't switch to renewable green energy sooner. If we would have done this, if we would have continued to do what the Obama administration was attempting to do under the Trump administration, which I felt like the Obama administration wasn't doing enough for the environment, but if we had even attempted to do that under the Trump administration, then right now we wouldn't necessarily be worrying about pipeline jobs. We could be worrying about jobs in hydroelectric energy, in creating more dams. And maybe the XL pipeline would be irrelevant. One thing that I guess I would like to hear your guys' take on this. One thing that I disliked, and obviously, Varun's a champion for the environment. And one thing that I strongly disliked was that Biden didn't make a promise to end fracking.
Right. And here's my counter as a big time Biden centrist supporter. And I'll let you chime in after me, Will, on this point, because I feel very strongly about it. Biden didn't promise to end fracking. He promised to stop fracking over a long, long, long promulgated period of time, and not just, within 1 year, 6 months. He promised to stop the blow that it would cause to people immediately and make sure it was phased out, right? So to Will's point earlier, we have to create jobs if we're going to take away jobs, mm-hmm. right? Have those ready for those people who are going to be taken out of work. And the problem with fracking and the tricky thing with fracking is that when you take away the jobs that fracking has created and has sustained for a long period of time, there's a void left in our communities of not just 11,000 people, but of hundreds of thousands of people. And so what Biden wanted to do is not just to end fracking right now and basically keep those people out of the loop and keep them unemployed. He wanted to create an alternate solution before he ended fracking. And so that's the approach he's taking towards these whole things. It's about a gradual solution so people don't suffer immediately, so people have a better opportunity. And so I think that laying the framework down is one of the most powerful things an administration can do. And by not being too rash about it, and by thinking about the economy and thinking about the short-term consequences while also thinking about the long-term consequences, the Biden administration is doing a great job in terms of fracking and the environment. I think that this pipeline XL project has shown how much they care about it, but they also need to care about American jobs. And by not ending fracking right now, they're doing that, they're showing that. What do you think about it, Will?
Yeah, just touching on the jobs. In Pennsylvania, there is between 20,000 and 50,000 jobs, in fracking alone. In the country, it's almost a million. So if you're going to create a million jobs for people that, that you're going to take away their fracking job, better be a damn good job because, obviously not as paying well as a healthcare professional, but I mean, if you're gonna take away fracking, you have to provide some sort of job. And I hope that if Biden does get rid of fracking, then and he's gonna have to substitute that for some sort of related. So, whether that be in the whole energy, or, you know, just specifically clean energy. I mean, you know, you can't, like, because, like, he was saying today, I think it was recently, in the past couple of days, he said that something about how he's trying to make, like, the environment like a center of his
administration,
right? And while that's good, there are so many, like, other things. And, like, you know, I know there's, you know, you can't. I wasn't a huge Greta Thunberg fan. I really wasn't. But she's kind of right in the sense that, you know, there's only so long we can go without, without not saving our environment. Because if we're heating up 3 degrees Celsius per year, then, you know, I feel like that's only going to be exponential. That's not going to be a linear graph. As our population rises, so will our carbon emissions. So while we need to tackle this, and while, you know, the next, like, over the next 4 years, we're going to have a lot of opportunities to do that, I'm going to use the America first, but specifically Americans first. You know, we need to get through this pandemic, because I think right now, out of everything, you know, between rejoining the Paris Climate Agreement to, you know, dropping the permit to the pipeline to, I've got my notes here, to, you know, executive orders to promote racial equality, like, you gotta get through the pandemic. And yes, I understand that Joe Biden has a lot to do, specifically because the last president was as controversial as he was. He's got a lot to do. He's already got the ball rolling. You know, he's got to get us through this pandemic. And that's what's really going to prove just how great of a president President Biden will be. And I think that ultimately is the next, you know, the next 6, 9, 12 months of this presidency. That's what it's going to be.
So. Yeah. I think I know that you've always thought that we should deal with the pandemic first, Will. I know that you've been, like, educated on that stance, but I've heard a lot of conservatives come out and say exactly what you're saying with hypocrisy. You're not being a hypocrite, because you've always believed that we should deal with the pandemic first. But a lot of conservatives are now coming out and saying we need to deal with the pandemic first and not worry about the economy, which is really kind of the opposite of what they were saying under the Trump administration. But it's interesting, and I think that you bring up a really good point. Again, I don't agree with I'm you know, both of you, I think, are well, Rune, I think Joe Biden's the perfect candidate for you. Well, I think you're a little bit further right of Joe Biden, a little bit, definitely a little bit, but you're further right of him, and I'm extremely far left of Joe Biden. You know, especially when it comes to things like the economy. Specifically the economy. I think that Joe Biden's a progressive candidate with respect to social issues and whatnot. But one thing that I think we can all agree on is that he has a real legacy token here. And that legacy token is this pandemic. And if he deals with this, you know, swiftly and adequately and makes it look easy, first of all, he was given this is the situation. I'm going to use this analogy. It's like when you start dating a girl that was in a really abusive relationship before you dated her, and you kind of, like, it makes you look better. That's kind of the situation that Joe Biden's in right now. We had a president that was really abusive when it came to COVID-19, and so anything that Joe Biden does is already better. For example, you know, a million vaccines a day isn't great. But when you have a president that was giving less than 800,000 vaccines daily on average, and you go, no, hey, now I'm giving a million, now I'm giving 1.5 million, you go, holy crap. Yeah.
To be fair, the Trump plan was supposed to be 100 million over 100 days. And then Joe Biden said a million per day. And it kind of made it sound like it was more, but, you know, technically, you know, 100 million over 100 days might be, you know, like, it's the same as 100
Well, yeah, the thing that I was saying, but, though, is like he wasn't doing it.
812. Yeah, I know.
Trump wasn't doing it. So
yeah, when I do believe Biden's plan was called the 100 days plan. I'm going to check myself.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, yeah, it was 100 days, 100 million vaccines. For his first 100 days in office. But I think that's something that we can all agree on is if he deals with this and he gets, you know, vaccines into every single American's arm, especially after the failure, like he literally is starting from scratch in terms of a plan.
There's no playbook.
Yeah, exactly. There's no playbook.
Last one they have is the one that Obama and Biden left.
Yeah, exactly. So he's just playing on his own. He's playing on his own playbook. He's not updated or anything.
Yeah.
So if he deals with this swiftly, despite what he does with the economy, despite what he does in the next 4 years, this first year could put him down as, I think, a top 15 president of all time, easily.
He has the opportunity like Trump did, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
let's talk about what kind of opportunity Trump had. I mean, Trump could have won the election if he simply wore a mask. And I'm going to be honest, like if he wore a mask and set the example for Americans, he would have won the election no matter what happened. Because the problem with what happened is by him not wearing a mask, he set a terrible example and made not wearing a mask and fear mongering a thing of conservatives. You know, I think that it has to be setting that example. And Biden's already gone way above and beyond what Trump has done in terms of setting that perfect example for Americans. Now, to go back on the points that I've heard, and I've been writing down notes as you guys have been speaking because I've been eager to speak about it, being the environmentalist that I am. I think that the problem with the environment is it's so fragile because we've been tabling the discussion for so long under the Obamas. We still tabled that discussion. Under Trump, we completely put that discussion to rest, right? There was no environmental discussion, no climate change in the EPA playbook under Trump. They took the EPA, the climate change word out of the EPA website under Trump. And so that wasn't even a reality. Under Obama, though, we tabled it, right? It's about America first, the economy. Now, this is an existential threat, guys. That's the point. We know it as Gen Zers. This, and I don't want to seem like I'm fear-mongering because I'm not. This is reality, right? If we don't handle this right now, it will bite us in the back economically and with our own lives. We will pay with our lives if we don't handle this this real existential crisis right now. And so we can't keep waiting, right? And to your point, Will, there is a real point about, are these jobs going to be better than fossil fuel jobs? They are. Mm-hmm. Here's why. Statistically, they're 25% more well-paying. Fossil fuel jobs. And so already we know that green energy jobs will pay more to the American people, create better jobs for the same amount of work being put into them. And so I think it's a great opportunity that we can't ignore because number one, it helps the economy. Number two, it helps the environment, which is needed. You're killing two birds with one stone. Once again, that's what the Green New Deal kind of plays upon. And that's been proven. It's 25% over the national minimum wage and, you know, way over fossil fuel jobs, right? If you look at the statistics. But beyond that, I think that the number one thing we have to do is beyond regulations, right? Beyond creating more jobs, we have to empower corporations to make the necessary steps to stop putting more carbon and fossil fuels into the atmosphere. And that's through a carbon tax. I've been talking about it so much. It's not through more government regulation in terms of specific things. It's through government regulation in terms of empowering corporations and incentivizing corporations for doing good things for the environment. It's kind of a centrist approach, in my opinion. But beyond, and I'm going to hit a couple of points here, beyond that discussion, with the pandemic, I think that what Biden's doing is just to mention a point here that hasn't been mentioned throughout this podcast, is having a whole different tone than what Trump had during his presidency. And Trump's tone was to say, we'll be over, you know, COVID by Easter, right? We're going to be over COVID in a couple of weeks, right? A couple of months. It turned into a couple of maybe almost coming up on a year now. Biden has been saying 1 million vaccines a day, 100 million vaccines in 100 days. The reality is, as Fauci's been telling us and the doctors, the White House have been telling us, he's going to be on par with releasing far more than 100 million vaccines during that period. That's a modest estimate. And so when I saw that fact, I checked it for myself because I was like, there's no way Biden's releasing 100 million vaccines in 100 days. I checked and I was like, well, it's actually a modest estimate. And so it's a difference between boasting of things that aren't even realistic and then scaling it back to give people the opportunity to be realistic, right? Not pessimistic per se, but be realistic and grounded in reality. And so I just wanted to highlight that big difference in what's happening. But back to the environment, I know you guys probably want to respond about that. Go ahead.
Yeah.
I didn't have anything. Go ahead, Will. I didn't have anything to say about it. That's what
I did want to close this. I actually had something I wanted to talk about after this. But just as a thought, this might cause a whole other tangent. But as I was thinking here, I'm probably thinking that, you know, I don't think that these 11,000 jobs are government workers. I think they're government contractors. So you have to think about, you know, with these 100,000 jobs, and, you know, when you start, let's just say we switch from these, you know, pipeline contractors, and we just stop building pipelines or stop maintaining pipelines, and we go completely green. You know, we've got more than 11,000 jobs. We've got, you know, we've got contracting jobs. We've got, so I think that, you know, this is just another thing to keep in mind. Biden, if you're watching, please keep this in mind. He's not watching.
I called him yesterday. He told me he was watching every episode.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead. Send us a text. He sends us a little thumbs up every time we're done filming.
But, you know, it's a good thing to keep in mind that, you know, not just 11,000 jobs. Like, you know, 11,000, that's a rough estimate. But, you know, should, you know, we keep on revoking pipeline permits and without plans, you know, it's going to be a lot more than 11,000, and our unemployment rate is going to be a lot higher than it was a year ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, four, five, six, you know. And, you know, we can't be too hasty with our shift to complete energy or renewable energy sources. Does anyone have anything else they want to mention?
Yeah, no. I agree. I don't think that we can be, quicker. I at the same time, I don't think we could be quicker, but we also have to, you know, proceed with caution and make sure that these individuals are being reeducated. I think that free college is a big part of that. I think that free healthcare is a big part of that, especially because these individuals are going to deal with healthcare repercussions from working in oil fields. So if you're going to give them a job that is, not extremely high paying, and you're going to expect them to pay their own college, they're literally just going to be slaves for like the rest of their lives. They're going to be in so much debt from their medical bills and from their re-education that they have to provide for themselves, that it's just not going to be stable, which again, in certain respects would benefit the economy, but it's not good for these people. But either way, beyond that, I just want to say, going with Varun's thing, you know, the 100 million, you mentioned the 100 million, vaccines. Actually, Biden yesterday purchased 200 million. So now there's a vaccine for every American. You know, that's going to be available. So that's a really good promise that he made, you know, to the United States. But I want to ask you guys, how do you feel? And this is something that as someone that goes against Joe Biden a lot, economically, and I know that he's progressive, but he likes avoiding certain issues. I never thought that he was going to say what he said during the insurrection. And I never thought that he'd be so vocal about this issue, because it's not something that a moderate candidate like Joe Biden would be vocal about. But when the insurrection happened, he said, essentially, had these people been black, it'd be a different story. And today he was saying that black and brown Americans, and he did say poor whites, to be fair, but he said black and brown Americans are being affected disproportionately by like, you know, the oil companies and by the effects of it. And it's very, very, very rare that you'll see a candidate like Joe Biden mention race directly. You know, it's kind of like a reverse dog whistle, where Trump would, say, we're going to make the suburbs safe. White women, vote for me. You know, please vote for me. We're going to make the suburbs safe. Joe Biden is literally saying, African-American, like black people, I see you. Brown people, I see you. Literally, which is a very, it goes against my expectation. I thought he was going to say, you know, we're going to help typically the dog whistle for progressive candidates like Joe Biden, you know, or whatever, centrist, is we're going to help the lower class. They always just refer to the low class, which typically encompasses black and brown people. And, you know, that's the best you'll get out of a candidate, the low class, the lower class. But Joe Biden is literally saying the races, which is really important to me.
So just to provide some context as a Joe Biden historian, like I am. One thing about Joe Biden is his 1994 crime bill, which he gets flack on for good reasons. There were some bad things put in there. But one thing he did fight for during that crime bill, which was meant to tackle violent crime for the most part, was when they talked about creating higher sentences and worse sentences for black nonviolent offenders. What Joe Biden said was we need to have less mandatory minimums. And that was one of his main central policies in the 1994 crime bill. And we all know that mandatory minimums are exceptionally high on Black Americans. And he was explicit about that. He talked about how African Americans had been hit with these mandatory minimums for drug crimes and sentenced to jail for decades and 12 years for a small drug crime that shouldn't have been sent to jail for more than 6 months, right? And so these things Joe Biden has been fighting for a long time, in my opinion. I think that he's been talking about race ever since his first Senate run. If you look back at his speeches and his discussions and his issues, they have been with the Congressional Black Caucus. And so I think that it's not unprecedented for Joe Biden to say. But obviously, being a centrist, his whole platform is unity. And I get what you're saying in the context of the fact that Joe Biden has been talking about bringing in both discussions. One thing that was interesting to me was wearing a purple tie as opposed to a red tie or a blue tie. And one of my friends who's been on the podcast before was talking to me about, you know, why is Joe Biden wearing a purple tie? I mean, it's against presidential duties in the American, you know, beliefs.
And I was like, fly as hell. Sorry.
And the reason why, beyond it being fly, which it is, the reason why is because, you know what, red and blue combined to make purple. And that's what Joe Biden is trying to permeate. And that's what people have been speculating about. It's what they've hinted at for a long time, but it's that unity between both parties. And he keeps doing it. And I think that when you talk about unity so much, and people think that he's, you know, he's talking about race to divide us, it should be a bipartisan discussion. Right? It should be a bipartisan discussion. Mm-hmm. So I think that it does fall in tune with what he's saying. But to go back a little bit, it's actually a lot. Go back on the climate argument, because I didn't get the chance to finish up my thoughts on it. And I know Will had a point he wanted to mention beyond there. But I want to just mention that we have 4 years under Biden to supposedly fix the environment, which can't be done. We know it. It's not going to take 4 years to create, like Will said, to Will's point, a million jobs. Right. So I think that the point throughout these 4 years has to be re-education, telling people that the environment is an issue that needs to be tackled, talking about climate change in our schools and communities, focusing on these things on an institutional level. And so when you create that education, you're not going to have discussion about whether or not climate change, the merits of climate change. There's going to be more bipartisanship on the issue. So my thing, if I was in elected office, would be to create more bipartisanship around the issue of climate change so we can actually have progress in the next 20 to 30 years, no matter who's president or who's elected officials. All have to have the same understanding of what our environment is facing and come to a bipartisan solution on these things. Once again, it has to be, for Joe Biden, for a lot of it, has to be, number one, not creating more projects, hurt the environment, not adding to what's going on right now, and actively taking steps behind the scenes to make a plan so that we can achieve carbon neutrality within the next 20 to 30 years. And that's the approach to take. It's not within 4 years and completely, utterly shutting down all fossil fuel jobs, mm-hmm. like people say that progressives and Democrats are doing. It's by setting the framework to create more green energy jobs and then moving people over to green energy jobs. And that's my approach. None of us want to lose jobs, but to mention that point. Will, if you want to add on to what we've been talking about.
Right. No, I agree with you, Vern. I really do. And it's kind of off topic, but to see you come from, you know, very far left to very centrist, I like that. I do. But no, I agree with the vast majority of what you just said. And, you know, I'm thinking about how, you know, just we are very grateful as a country to have a very unique climate. As it, like, you know, the climate of like Switzerland is like the same climate, like pretty much everyone in Switzerland. You know, we have a desert area. We've got, we've got the north where it's cold. We've got Florida. We've got like a lot of different ecosystems and diversity and mm-hmm. biodiversity in our country. And I'm just thinking about, you know, how blessed I am to have been able to, you know, see the Grand Canyon or and that's in majority Arizona, but also Monument Valley in Utah. And you know, this summer I'll be going I'll be hiking at Philmont Scout Camp in New Mexico, and you know, even places in Georgia like Victoria Bryant State Park. You know, we have a lot of, you know, we have a really big reason to preserve our environment. And, you know, that's kind of why, that's one of the reasons Teddy Roosevelt's probably my favorite U.S. president. But, you know, I just want to end on the fact that, you know, just because a lot of Republicans, you know, want to, like, keep oil and, you know, there's it can't just be, you know, we can't just immediately dive into it. So I hope that we can turn those 11,000 jobs into 22,000 and yep. in, you know, clean environment.
Yeah.
Varun, you sound like you had something you wanted to say.
One thing, and being the person that I am, I want to focus upon political science as a degree and a kind of focus of study. I think that politics is not the art of just doing one thing spontaneously. It's the art of thinking about the consequences upon different fields and making a solution that appeases everybody, because it is the art of compromise, right? To create good solutions, you have to have compromise between different ideological beliefs. What I want to say is we have to make a belief and a system that provides a good economic output and creates more jobs, like you said, while also helping the economy and it's the environment, sorry. And it's both things together that make a good environmental approach and not just one or the other. But you go ahead.
Yeah, right. Well, right. Were you going to say something, Will? Sorry.
Not relating to that. I was going to move on to another.
Oh, yeah, no. I just want to say, you know, you said Varun's come more to the center. I think that it's you've come more to the left. I think you've made the steps, not Varun. We've all come closer to the left in certain respects. I think I've made a big shift.
Mm-hmm. Here's my take. I've made a little bit of a shift, but I think Damien's shift has highlighted my shift.
Damien,
that's what I'm thinking.
Definitely. But you know, speaking of the highlighted shift here, I always make the claim that and I think it's very you know, you Varun, you were talking about how you know, politics is supposed to try to help the majority of people. I think American politics doesn't do that. American politics focuses on helping the higher class. I think that neoliberal policies that Joe Biden has supported do that. I think that most definitely Republican policies and tax cuts, as the 2017 tax cuts we saw, do that. I don't think that we're trying to benefit the working class whatsoever. If we wanted to, we would allow unionization. You know what? Again, make the minimum wage $0. Make the federal minimum wage $0.
Mm-hmm. Have you not to cut you off, but have you heard about Joe Biden's new EO about unionization? Empower unions to be created, workers unions.
Yeah. And I think that I'm in favor of that. But one thing that we need to make sure is that, because I hope you know, and this, I mean this in the most literal sense, unions in the United States are clapped. Like, they're clapped. And what I mean by that is they're not unions. They're literally just like capitalist pockets. Unions are literally for-profit organizations in the United States, which is not what they're meant to be. And so we need to make sure that unions can be created, cool, but are they being created for the right reasons, or are they being created so that the union head gets money from, you know, his employees or his members paying him? Are they really going to advocate for things, or are they just going to make sure, like in the United States, that crappy police officers don't get fired? Because if you want to talk about defunding the police, I say we defund police unions, which is one of the only areas that I think should not be unionized. Because police unions, well, I think they should be unionized, but I think one area where unionization has been catastrophic is in police unions. It has attributed to the bastardized system that police officers find themselves in. And again, hot take, but it's 1,000% true, because you have police officers that are hired after being fired, you know, in complaints because of police unions. So I think that it's important to start to realize the fact that we have failed the majority of Americans post 1950s. We did it in the Vietnam War. We did it in the war on terrorism. We did it in 9/11. You know, Will was mentioning that Joe Biden might be listening to this podcast. The Patriot Act says that at least someone in the government's listening to this podcast. So, you know, I think
Freedom Act says otherwise. Freedom Act says otherwise. Always a counter, my friend. But go ahead.
Yeah. Sure. Fair enough. But Edward Snowden says hi from Russia. Either way, I think that we've failed individuals that have tried to do the right thing, such as Edward Snowden. I think that we failed the majority of Americans, and I think that we need to stop, because I hope you know a big thing, a big reason that we're becoming energy independent isn't because, and I keep seeing this brought up, isn't because of the Middle East. The Middle East doesn't have the largest oil reserve in the world. You want to know which country has the largest oil reserve in the world?
Venezuela?
Venezuela. And if we start buying from Venezuela, guess what happens to their economy? It starts going up. And if the Venezuela's economy starts going up, guess what doesn't look so bad? Huh? Socialism. So you have to be careful. And that's one of the reasons that we're becoming energy dependent, is because we want to continue to strangle Venezuela. And we want to stop giving them funds, despite whatever, you know, in order to literally build, you know, put in a coup there. So something to keep your eyes on during the Trump or during the Biden presidency. Let's see if a coup doesn't you know, get started in Venezuela. But that's something that needs to be brought to attention, too. That concludes the hour segment of this podcast. To listen to or watch the remainder of this episode, head over to polititeen.com and click the Watch tab in the top right. Beyond that, thank you for listening to another episode of Polititeen.